Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
But God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding, his church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life, it's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
You know, we offer theological solutions, theological reflections about what the truth is about our life and our life in Jesus and so forth, all of which is necessary and true, helpful, and meaningful. And at the same time, I've become just aware that over time, that it's not just when shame rears its head, we're tempted to just simply say, look, we have Good Friday and we have the resurrection and we have the ascension and we have the consummation that is coming. And so that's all we have to know. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. And yet that doesn't seem to be enough, because I hear those words and those words are true, but I hear them through my left brain and my right brain, which is where my shame matrix often hides out, is left adrift from that. It's left isolated from that. And what I really need is community.
Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. Hi, I'm Paul Perreault from Faith Radio with Gabe. And this next week, Gabe, you want to take us on a deep dive into an interesting topic, the topic of neuroscience and our faith.
Now, some of you don't study neuroscience or biology or understand some of this world, but we're all starting to appreciate more and more the power of how our minds work. As we talk about mental health in our society, there couldn't be anything more important than starting to recognize the way God's designed our minds to function. And how do we do that in the most creative of ways? How do we make sure we're operating in rhythms that bring out the best in how we think? We want to think well. It's part of our tagline at Q Ideas: stay curious, think well, and advance good. Well, today I'm going to interview in long form Kurt Thompson. Dr. Kurt Thompson is an incredible psychiatrist. He's also an author of several books, some of his most recent, The Soul of Shame, and then in the last few weeks, his new book, The Soul of Desire, Discovering the Neuroscience of Longing, Beauty, and Community. We've loved having Dr. Kurt Thompson as a part of our Q Ideas environments and retreats and many different spaces we invite leaders into to help us address and better understand what's happening to our minds. We did interview him recently at our Q&A event, where we talked about mental health, suicide, and why is suicide becoming a real option for people. And he digs so deep into that. You can access that conversation that went on for 90 minutes at Q Media by going to qideas.org/trial to get a free trial.
Gabe, I know we want to get to your conversation about neuroscience with Kurt Thompson, but you mentioned his part in that Q&A virtual town hall last year. It was an important time of some longer discussions. So, tell you what, let's take about 8 minutes of this show to hear a segment of the conversation around mental health and suicide that Kurt was part of, along with Pastor Scott Saul.
Kurt, I just want to start with you with this question. As you think about leaders right now joining us, church leaders, pastors, the people who are with us in this room, who've been through a pretty difficult year where our mental health has been more challenged. It was already challenged, and now it's increasingly been challenged. As you think about leaders who come into a space like this today, and they're already feeling down, they're already walking in, maybe depressed. Maybe in a place where they're like, I can't lead anybody right now. I'm not in a good place. How would you offer hope even as we enter into this conversation about what you've seen God do in leaders' lives when they walk into a place like this and go, okay, I'm going to be open. I'm going to try to better understand what's happening in my brain, what's happening in my body as we begin this conversation.
Well, thanks, Gabe. I think one of the things that we talk about in neuroscience is that, you know, science gives us ideas about the mechanics of what we do, but it doesn't really give us the meaning behind the mechanics. It doesn't really tell us why or what the purpose of these mechanics are. And one of the first things that I do is to invite people to really go back to the foundational texts. What does it mean for us to be human? For us to be human, in at the end of the second chapter of Genesis, we see that the man and the woman were naked and they were unashamed. That for us to be human is to be deeply known for the purpose of creating beauty. That's our purpose. And so we do that by being differentiated from others, and those differentiated parts coming together in places of great vulnerability and in the absence of shame. So differentiation, vulnerability, and in the absence of shame. And one of the things that I think that evil wields is this notion, first of all, of isolation. Right, we have, and this isolation began long before COVID. I mean, it begins in Genesis in many respects. And so for those who are here and wondering, what can I do about where I am? The first question that I would have is, who are the people who are coming to find you? Because we don't regulate our emotional states, we don't regulate our depression, we don't regulate our anxiety without the help of somebody else's brain. I need that. And of course we'd say, well, yeah, but it feels kind of shaming for me to say, hey, I can't get my crap together. Can you help a brother? It's not like, I'm guessing that most people didn't walk in today looking for somebody. That's the first thing that you say. But that is actually what we need all the time. I need someone coming to find me all the time. And so I would ask that question, who are the people who are coming to find us? Because isolation, I think, is the single most important thread of all of what we're seeing that is so debilitating about our culture long before COVID, and now with COVID that much more accentuated. And asking for someone to come to find us is an act of great vulnerability, because it does acknowledge that I need you to help me. But I don't just need you to help me. I need you in order for us actually to create together. I want to go beyond just not being sick. I actually want to be creative. And so then the other question becomes, who are the people that we see that we're going to help? And by pastors, I'm asking those, who are the pastors that others in this room are going to go find?
Yeah.
Pastors are going to find people all the time. The question that I would have, who are the people who are coming to find them? And we can talk more about that.
Yeah.
That's
well, let's go to Scott, because Scott, you're a pastor. This has been your journey for a couple decades now. You've also authored a couple just prolific books, Jesus Outside the Lines, and most recently, A Gentle Answer, which has been so timely for this season for Christians to really understand what does it mean to have a gentle answer in a culture that's kind of built on harsh rhetoric. But as a pastor, you hear Kurt talk, and we have so many pastors and church leaders here, it feels like the pastor's the one that many times is trying to meet the needs of everybody else and don't always have somebody that they can go to. How does that feel as a pastor when you hear Kurt say that and you process that through your own journey? I know you've walked out a depression journey where you've talked very openly and transparently about that. But how important is what Kurt just said for any leader in this room about the need for a pastor to have a person that they can go to?
It's very important what Kurt is saying, and it's confounding how you get there. We were talking, before we came up on stage about a teacher in when I was in seminary. One of the professors said, "Don't expect to have people in your church that care for you." And I thought, that's ridiculous. That's just absurd. After doing this for 30 years, I understand it. I'm still fighting against that counsel, because I believe that God has made us to be mutually and reciprocally found, right? But over the years, to the point, I can't tell you how many times I've heard church members say, nobody from the church pursued me. I disappeared and nobody pursued me. Nobody talks to me. I've never heard a single person, I've never heard a pastor say that. And yet it's completely true about every pastor, that oftentimes we feel lonely in our own communities. And I think this year, case in point, 2020, with all that 2020 has done to church life, you've got this dynamic where reality is 70% of pastors right now around America are looking for another job. 70.
That's wow, pretty staggering. 70%.
I can't remember if that's Barna or Tom Rainer, but it's It's data. 70% are looking for other work right now. And the dynamic, I've tried to even explain this to church members, and they're like, huh? And I'm like, I guess you have to be in it in order to really understand it. Our dynamic is that essentially the feeling is that 60% of our people have ghosted us for the last 7 months, right? And our people feel like they're still with us because they can see us and hear us from their living rooms, right? And yet we just have this complete void of relationship. And I think what church people don't realize, and I don't know if this is typically an American issue or a global church issue, but church members, especially in a city like Nashville, where there's all this church hopping, and you know, what's the IT church of the year, and we're going to go to the IT church of the year, and then we'll go to another one next year, and so on. People oftentimes, not everybody, but oftentimes people treat the church as a consumer good, and we see the church as our family. This is our people, right? And so the dynamic of loneliness and isolation is amplified in a time like this, because you start to feel like, gosh, are we really a community? Because wouldn't I be hearing from people? You hear church members say, well, nobody pursued me. And then, you know, but a pastor can't say, why isn't anybody pursuing us? Why isn't anybody asking how we're doing? Complaining in the church is way up. Just the negativity of the environment oftentimes gets taken out on your caregivers, and that includes therapists, it includes pastors and others. And so it really is the perfect emotional storm right now for pastors. And so whoever that community is, whether it's your staff team or whether it's a therapist or yeah, you know, just a friend outside your church, even if you need that community and kind of fighting against isolation is utterly essential. So
well, again, that was only a small portion of an over 70-minute conversation around the topic of mental health and suicide that was part of the Q&A virtual town hall from last year, a two-day event with many important discussions. You can watch them all on the Q Media platform at qideas.org. And if you're not a subscriber yet, just a reminder, you can request that free 30-day trial subscription and then take it all in. Well, let's continue with Q Ideas for this week and the topic of neuroscience and our faith. As Gabe, this and next week you'll be talking with Kurt Thompson. And really, this is a way of introducing something new that Q is putting together.
We've partnered with Kurt to launch a new podcast. How many times on a podcast are you hearing about another podcast? Well, here at Q Ideas, we're launching a new network of podcasts because we want you to have access to some of the greatest thought leaders and minds that we need for this moment to better understand how to navigate the future. And so we're launching Neurofaith with Dr. Kurt Thompson, where he's bringing together this combination of great science and understanding how our minds are made into the real world of how our faith starts to impact that, and into the ways we're thinking about the world and how we operate in our emotional health, our physical health, our spiritual health. This first season will invite you to go into the depths of how our minds were meant to function and how we can think well about the culture we're in, about the way our minds are working, about the way our relationships work, about the ways we feel about God and spirituality. We're going to dig deep into that with Dr. Kurt Thompson, so follow him. But today, I want you to listen in now as we have a conversation about the soul of shame and the soul of desire and the importance for us to recognize these key emotions and why God gave them to us and how they can start to help us better reflect His nature and His design for our life. Well, Dr. Kurt Thompson, welcome to the Q Ideas podcast. It's good to have you today.
Oh, Gabe, thank you so much. A moment ago getting ready for this, not just great to be here and on the podcast, but it's really, really good to hear your voice. And I am going to enjoy the next few minutes as much just because I'm talking with you as much as the ideas that we're talking about. So,
well, you are kind, and everybody who knows you, and you've been around this community now for a few years where you've just been such a consistent, I would say, calming voice in the midst of a season where so many people have really been wringing their hands, trying to figure out what's going on inside their own minds, their own hearts, their own responses and reactions to what's happening in the world around us. And it's been such a chaotic couple of years, especially that, man, God's just used you to help so many leaders I know and so many people that listen and are part of these communities feel encouragement and feel their way through kind of navigating some of this. And it's so cool because I always love it when God's uniquely positioned somebody, giving them the experience, giving them the knowledge, the understanding, the wisdom prior to maybe a moment where it was going to be just demanded. And so you've helped so many of us. And so today's exciting because you've been working for many, many years on a new project that we're going to get into. But for people who don't really know your journey, I mean, catch us up and catch those up who don't know who you are and just kind of how you got into psychology, what your work has been for many, many years. And then I want to dig into some of the details here of the things I've been learning through you and that I hope others can learn.
Well, I think for me, life begins and ends. I think for our listeners, an important thing to know is that my life begins and ends with my relationships that are closest to me. And so that is I'm married to a woman, Phyllis, 35 years this September, a woman that I don't deserve. And I have two children who are also who live radiant lives, but who also know what it means to really work hard to follow after Jesus. And so it has been deeply formative for me to be in these relationships and the friendships that I have. And I count even the work that I get to do relationally with you, Gabe, and with Rebecca and with others as being formational for me. So I say all that to say the work that I do for a living, which is as a psychiatrist, so, medical school and residency, and now seeing patients in a lot of different kinds of circumstances over the last 30 plus years. This, of course, has a lot to do with neuroscience and how the brain works and how the brain interacts with relationships. And it is also about this question of how does the brain in relationships, how does that interaction play itself out in the context of the biblical narrative? Because I think we like to say that anytime a patient comes to see me, that one of the things that we're really trying to do with them is not just relieve them of symptoms, but really trying to get them to help answer the question, in what story do I believe that I'm living and how can I live more truly in the story that is really before me?
Mm-hmm. And this is so unique, Kurt. I mean, this type of work that you do, a lot of places, they're only trying to relieve symptoms. They're only trying to ease people in their momentary crisis or pain. And you've taken just this much deeper look that that's not going to last if we don't get underneath it. How do your clients respond to that kind of approach? And do you find a lot of clients that come to you and they go, well, nobody's ever told me this, that there's more that I need to do besides just get medication, for example?
Right. And I think you're right. I think, it's crucially important to recognize that there is a role for the physical intervention in life. There's a role for pharmacology, for medication intervention. There is a role for even other kinds of medical interventions in psychiatric distress and disturbances. The challenge, I think, Gabe, is that so much of our psychiatric challenge has a lot to do with our trauma and has a lot to do with the way we have tried to cope with that and make sense of that. And that trauma isn't just something that happens to me in my own personal life, in my own mind. It is an event. We like to say that when it comes especially to our emotional distress, those traumatic events take place always in the context of intimate relationships. The most powerfully traumatizing things for us often are taking place in the context of the relationships with which we expect to have the most intimate safety. And so our listeners themselves can imagine in their own lives, in their own stories, plenty of places and ways in which trauma has emerged. And for many of us, I would say also, Gabe, many of us have had traumatic experiences that we wouldn't categorize as such. And because we don't, because we don't think, because like I've not been in combat in Iraq, because I have not been systematically gang raped, if I haven't had some kind of major thing happen, I don't think of trauma as having had anything to do with my life. But we find that for many of us, our traumas come in very, very small, repetitive ways over the course of many, many decades. And I think that one of the things that neuroscience is really awakening us to and has helped reveal to us the way the brain works and all the different domains of the mind that I talk about in my first book, Anatomy of the Soul, a lot of the neuroscience really gives us a better understanding of the mechanics and the framework about how our relationships and our brain is working together. And when we are given that kind of information, we are then given ways of really addressing this. And of course, this then leads into the Soul of Shame, the book that came out about 6 years ago, in which what we're really trying to explore is this one particular human experience, this interpersonal neurobiological experience of shame that tends to, when we respond to it poorly, it tends to be the source of just about every possible thing that we could see that's wrong in our lives, in our culture, everything from my, you know, personal sense of just feeling awful about myself that I then work really hard to not pay attention to because I've got work to do and kids to raise and a business to run and a church to pastor and all the things. But when I don't pay attention to it, at some point my brain runs out of gas. And that's where we find that symptoms start to emerge. And, you know, in our culture that is so apt to want to just simply solve a problem, and I want this problem solved quickly, that's where we can think, oh, I have this thing called depression, and so therefore I get medication. That somehow should be the ultimate solution to this, without really being aware even that there is a story underneath this that is worth exploring. But that story takes time, and it takes a connection to a community of people who are willing to walk with me in that regard. I think one of the things that I've really loved about the Q Ideas community has been, and with your leadership, in really inviting people to be curious. I mean, that whole phrase, stay curious.
Yeah.
Whether you know this or not, this is one of the most common phrases, I mean, that we've been using for years. One of those common things that we really train and invite our patients and our clinicians to really access. I really want to be curious about these parts of me that I find to be so painful, instead of just being judgmental of them and wishing that they would just go away.
Right, man. Well, the curiosity piece, I think, for all of us, and just the journey of exploring, asking questions, having like a healthy skepticism, is a really important piece of critical thinking and of us getting to the bottom of what's really going on. And your book, Soul of Shame, I was telling you earlier, you know, Rebecca has read, marked that up, and it's kind of preached it to me and tried to help me understand it, but I couldn't understand it until I went through it myself. And it was so helpful and so deep. I was in a men's study just the other day, and one of the men was recommending it to the other men. He's like, you need to read this book. And telling them, like, this is such an important understanding to see how shame causes us to move towards isolation and away from relationship when the actual solution is to move towards relationship. And so I know we won't be able to unpack that entirely here. I want people to go get that book, though, because I think it's so foundational to us understanding why we do what we do and how we respond to people and why we find ourselves isolated. But your latest project, I mean, you've been working on for 5 years. It's a book called The Soul of Desire. So you wrote The Soul of Shame, and now you're unpacking for us The Soul of Desire, and the subtitles, Discovering the Neuroscience of Longing, Beauty, and Community. I've heard you talk and riff on this over the last couple of years, but I'm so excited it's finally going to be in a form that everybody can grapple with this. So give us a bit of the synthesis of the big idea for The Soul of Desire.
You know, Gabe, as I mentioned to you beforehand, this was a bit of a labor of love. This is a book that did not just immediately come forth. And so in many respects, what emerged over the course of those 5 years represents some of my own wrestling match, and that wrestling match with myself and with my own story. I'm, you know, 58, nearly 59 years old. And I'm even in the last, you know, couple of years, last 6 months, last 2 weeks, have been wrestling with things afresh in ways that I never have. And, you know, as The Soul of Shame has kind of made its way and into the hands of people who've read it, and I've continued to sit with that, it really began to strike me over time that, and even though I offer a response to the experience of shame in that book, what began to grow in my awareness is that, you know, even when this is true for much of our spiritual ill, We offer ourselves, we offer our friends, we offer our congregations, we offer cognitive answers to these things. And these are, you know, we offer theological solutions, theological reflections about what the truth is about our life and our life in Jesus and so forth, all of which is necessary and true, helpful and meaningful. And at the same time, I've become just aware that, you know, that over time, that it's not just when shame rears its head, we're tempted to just simply say, look, we have Good Friday and we have the resurrection and we have the ascension and we have the consummation that is coming. And so that's all we have to know. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. And yet that doesn't seem to be enough. Because I hear those words, and those words are true, but I hear them through my left brain and my right brain, which is where my shame matrix often hides out, is left adrift from that. It's left isolated from that.
Well, this is Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, and you know, we really hate to do this, but we have to press the pause button right there because Gabe and Kurt kept their conversation going for another 20 minutes or so. We'll bring you all that next week. Now, remember, the new podcast series called Nero Faith featuring Kurt Thompson will be dropping shortly. When it does, you'll find it as part of the Q Media platform at qideas.org. I'm Paul Perreault. Thanks for listening to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. We hope you come back for part two of this conversation next week.
This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.